Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today, former BYU football and NFL running back, and now the BYU Office of Belonging, Manager of Experiences and Initiatives. It's a very long title.
Yeah.
Fui Vakapuna.
How are you?
Doing very good. Does that all fit? I don't even know if people use business cards anymore. Does that even fit on a business card?
I hope so. Hopefully. Hopefully I can make an acronym out of it.
That's,
you know,
right.
Something fun.
Yeah. So, that's, you know what? Let's actually start there. We have so many things, Fui, to talk to you about. Some very important things to get to, but what is your role in the BYU Office of Belonging? Because I know that's a fairly new thing, not just for you, but on campus. So give everybody an idea of what your role is and what that is in general.
For sure. I just want to really pay homage and give a shout out to President Worthen and him and what he's done in bringing about belonging.
Yeah.
Right? Belonging wasn't even a word in anything like the last 10 years, actually. It's just finally a new word that's coming out coming up into fruition as something that's making an impact in our school, in communities, in the world, I think. And President Worthen, kudos to him, and I'm tipping my hat off to him for what he's done in bringing that about. But it's the Office of Belonging is where I work and where I serve students and faculty and staff, but also I work under Vice President Carl Hernandez. And so my mentor, my leader in leading belonging experiences, and specifically what I do is helping students get connected, feel a sense of belonging, and hopefully help them become who they're meant to become. And so if it's through events, if it's through experiences, if it's through mentorship and guiding them in life skills, if there's anything with wellness, all those things that encompass belonging, that's basically what I do in a nutshell.
Wow, that's what an important thing we have on campus here for students, for athletes. What does it mean to you to be a part of something like that as a former athlete here, now being able to sort of pay this stuff forward?
For sure. I think it starts with where you come from, right? And where we come from, we believe that we come from our Father in heaven, and there's a purpose here. There's a plan. There's a plan of happiness. And what we have to encompass in how we put it out into the world is a gospel-led, gospel-centered approach, in that we believe that our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, is the one that leads it. And so he's helped us and given us the opportunity to find ways in a gospel-centered manner to go out there in the world or the communities to help and make impacts for good for people.
Well, as if your life wasn't busy enough, you're obviously a family man. You got your husband, your father. You've got this job that obviously keeps you busy during the day. You also, by the way, were recently announced as the head coach of the Utah Islanders, right?
Yeah.
So that's a developmental football team.
Yep.
When do you have time for this?
You know, it's always been. I think it's just my mission or my purpose here in this time is to help serve others or find ways to help others that have been looked down on or been overlooked, and find ways to help them become who they're meant to become. And so being in that capacity to just be a coach and being in that limelight helps me connect with those players and help them, give them hope about, hey, you can still have an opportunity to play football. You can still play at a high level. Parents, you don't have to give up, you know, watching your kids. They can still play for an extra few years in college, right, mm-hmm. and play at a high level. And it's just to develop them and also behind the scenes help them and develop them in their life skills, right? There's more to football, as Kalani said, more to life. There's built for life, right? Mm-hmm. That Kalani has always, Coach Kalani Sitake has always talked about, and we believe that we can do the same thing. There's more to football out there, and if we could help impact those kids or those players out there, I'd love to help. Yeah.
One of the things that you've talked about is just how excited you are to be able to help people and to be able to make a difference in other people's lives. And we were talking just a minute ago before we started recording the podcast, with everything that you've gone through, especially recently, how much more that probably means to you than it ever could prior to. And for those that may not know what you've been dealing with over the last year plus, about a year ago, you recovered from brain surgery. And for those that don't know your story, take everybody through what happened.
Yeah, I just had a condition where I kind of carried right after I retired from the NFL. I just had a condition where I would the left side of my face and my neck or left side of my body would twitch, would spaz and spasm out, it was just uncontrollable, and it would just keep on affecting me. And so that happened for a while, and we found a doctor that was there to help heal or find a way where it can stop all the knocking that was going on in my head. It was just consistent.
You were hearing a knocking constant,
a noise. It was just a knock on a door, but it happened millions of times throughout the day, and it just kept on knocking. It'd just be like that,
really,
every time. And so that's what I was dealing with for years. And so a year ago, I took a chance and found a doctor that would help me and would go in and find a healing or find a way to alleviate that pain or the mental anxiety, the stresses that were going all the above that I was literally going through that. And thankfully we found a healing, but it took some time because it was hard. After the surgery, it was hard for me to walk. I had to learn how to walk again.
Yeah.
And so that was another hurdle or a bump in the road that I had to go through. So learned how to walk again. And then four months later, I went through rehab and all those things and finally came out walking normal and enjoying life and being with my family, being with my wife and my kids, and just thankful. Yeah.
So no knocking sound, no spasms.
Yeah.
It's all gone.
All gone. All gone.
What type of blessing is that? Because regardless of how severe or what the ailment is, as human beings, I think when things happen to us, we find a way to just adjust and cope with it.
Right.
And you just sort of live with it.
Right.
Sounds like you were doing that for so long.
Yeah.
How much of a blessing is it to have that taken away?
Totally. Every day I wake up, I'm getting emotional talking about it. Just every day I just wake up and just thanking God for an opportunity to not feel any type of pain, not feel any type or hearing any type of knocking or sounds going in my head, right? And enjoying my family like that, like the quality of life for me now has been like, I want to live it and I want to enjoy it. And I want to take every opportunity to at least give back to my family and to the people I love or to the community. If I have the capacity to do it.
You know, anytime somebody hears a story like what you just said, knowing your background in football, immediately you think CTE. Those are the types of things you immediately is this a result of your playing career? Was it along the same lines we're hearing about CTE?
For
those
sure.
types of things.
For sure, yeah, I believe so. I was knocking heads and hitting. That's part of the nature of the game of football and. Learned about it later on in life when we had doctors come in and talking to us about CTE later on in my NFL career. Like that it just barely started happening, right? Junior Seau was the first that kind of like made us aware, you know, and got us educated on what's going on with even just with mental health, right? And CTE and all those TBI, all those things are real. And so if there's if football, you're going to have some type of those things to affect you. But you got to educate yourself, and hopefully I can help players understand and educate them on how to approach the game of football in a manner where it doesn't have to hurt you in later on in your life. So, yeah, for sure.
What was the reaction of those around you, family, close friends? How did they handle the stuff you were going through and trying to help you?
Yeah, I kept it quiet until my wife really put it out there the day of my surgery.
Because nobody, it really was that way. Like nobody knew anything was going on. And then nothing. All of a sudden there's this news.
Yeah. And throughout that time when I was going through this, we were trying to find doctors that would be trying to willing to go in and help with, cause we didn't, I would say there wasn't no doctor out there that would take the risk to go inside my brain and find what was going on. But Dr. Mon is his name. Shout out to him. He was the one that was thankful because of him. We found a way, and he knew exactly what was going on. And so he was the one that educated me. I'm like, this is what's happening. And so he was confident, and I loved his confidence. It's like I was literally crying. Like, man, you could heal me. Like, quality of life. You could help me be with and enjoy my kids, playing around with them. If I could have an opportunity to coach, and yeah. So it was just those. Just man, I kept it quiet, and there was a reason for it. I just didn't want to burden anyone, and that was what I was going through. And obviously, my wife was the one that carried me. Mm-hmm. And she was there right by my side the whole time, all those years. But we finally found a doctor, and when she shared it with everyone, I didn't realize it was gonna impact that many people. And so I just started sharing my story with others and saying it's okay to talk about it. And yeah, it's okay. You know, mental health is real. You can find help. You can find therapy out there. You could find those that know what you're going through, and you could connect with them in a way where, like, you could be vulnerable and find healing in within that.
Yeah. Well, and I've got to imagine that you've probably received a ton of support, certainly from friends and family, people you know, former teammates, people within the university and whatnot. But I've got to imagine you've probably received a ton of support from people who were complete strangers. What is that like to make that? Because you talked about having an impact.
Yeah.
What's that support been like for you?
I think there's you don't realize it because you just feel I just feel inadequate at times to speak on it. But I didn't realize I went through that experience where I could help find some healing for them. There is hope, right? Yeah. And there's always help out there for that. And that to me, talking and sharing and testifying about, you know, finding that help, like, you need it. And you don't have to sit alone and in the dark and just hear the knocking that's going in your head. Or it's okay to share it. People will be able to help you if you just share it, because there was some just pride,
right?
And I would say ego in holding that in, and I would just, if there was any twitching or spasming that was going on with my face, I would just turn and start talking, and those were like my remedies to have anybody not know what was going on with me. But I'm like, nah, if I could help serve or find ways to help them, that's what I was doing the whole, trying to do the whole time.
It's hard to be vulnerable sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, nobody wants to, look, nobody wants to show weakness.
Yeah.
And even if it's not a weakness, we perceive it as a weakness, and absolutely, we don't want to show others that maybe, oh, we're not perfect. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a weird psychological thing that we all go through in varying degrees
for sure
in our entire life. It's kind of crazy how we all do this.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought it was my perception of the world, right? But once I understood other people's perspective and hey, I'm here to help and nothing else, or like, I would love to help. And that kind of helped me understand, like, man, there's bridges to be built by just sharing your story and having people, like, letting them know that there is help out there. You could find that help, and it's down the street. It can be, it could be down the hallway. It could just be your teacher, your bishop, your state president. It could be your primary teacher. It's just, there's help that's out there. But when it came to, you know, like the surgical part, like that part was, I was thankful that Dr. Mon was there to, like, man, thank you. And I would say he would be like the LeBron James of brain surgeons that's out there. So shout out to you.
Well, we are so happy that things have progressed the way they have, and that you are enjoying life more today. That's fantastic. How about we talk some football?
For sure.
Let's talk a little football.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. When we come back, we're going to get into Fui's football career, how he got into it. We'll talk a lot of BYU football. We're talking with the great Fui Vakapuna here on the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Hi, everybody. Jason Shepherd here, host of the Deep Blue Podcast. I want to make sure that you're aware of all of the other great podcasts we have on BYU Radio, like Her Why, hosted by Lauren McLean. It's all BYU women's athletics all the time. These great athletes join Lauren to share their personal stories of triumphs and trials, and we've got some of the best women's athletic teams in the NCAA. This is their story. This is their why. Listen to it wherever you get podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd, joined today by former Cougar, former NFLer, Fui Vakapuna. If you missed the first part of the podcast, we're talking about the trials that he's overcome in the last year or so, and just what an inspiration that story is for anybody that's going through any type of struggle in their life. But I want to talk now about growing up. So talk to me about your childhood. Oldest of eight kids, right?
Yeah, oldest of eight.
How crazy was your household growing up?
Yeah. It was crazy. But it was fun, though, at the same time. Yeah.
So tell everybody where you grew up, what life was like for you as you were making your way through through your childhood.
Yeah, I grew up. So my parents are Semisi Vakapuna and Wina Vesenia Vakapuna Taufatofua. They're from the kingdom of Tonga. They migrated from Tonga here to the States through Hawaii, through Samoa, through California, out and migrated out here to Utah. Mm-hmm. And so I was born and raised here. Raised in Glendale, raised in just right in Salt Lake. I say Glendale is a city and Salt Lake's the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so, that's the neighborhood I grew up in. I grew up in West Valley as well, and in Rose Park, those areas, right in the 801 up north. And so, the oldest of eight, wild bunch, I would say, but a good, loyal wild bunch, and just thankful for my parents and thankful for my grandparents. They're the and my uncles and aunties that raised us. It was literally a village that raised us kids, and got to go to Parkview Elementary, went to Glendale Middle School, was the president of Glendale Middle School, and then student body president, and then went to East High School and played there. Was gonna go to Skyline, but my dad was just like, "Nah, you're staying at East High School. You're gonna be a Leopard."
So, like, obviously, we talk to athletes on this podcast. So, at some point, sports became a pretty important part of your life.
Yeah.
When was that for you?
I think watching my father was a rugby player, right? He was an amazing rugby player, and he was known in the Tongan community and Samoan community as a rugby player. Played number 8, and so he was one of those tough guys, hardcore rugby players, and got to watch that and was inspired by rugby. The first sport I got to play was soccer, and played soccer and then got in trouble for kicking the ball or the goal. It was really the goalie that I kicked, but I was trying to kick the ball, but
right.
he can't, you know, and
yes.
got in trouble. And then my dad was like, soccer's not for you. And so he was like, here's football. Let's throw you in. And so I jumped in to playing football.
At what age?
At 8. Eight.
Eight?
At
okay.
Eight. Yep. Played football. My first football program that I played in was Hunter Little League. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
It was Hunter Little League at the U Conference. Mm-hmm. And then the next year I went to play for East Little League the whole time. And a few years with East Little League, and then 1 year with West Little League. And that was with one of the great, he's going to be a future Hall of Famer, Jalo Tingata. I played with him. And I played literally with him. I got some pictures. Yeah, I have to send it to you. But played running back, played quarterback, played corner, safety. I played all the positions. So I was just a lively, wired kid to play sports.
Was it an instant connection with football?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, my little brothers followed me right after, and I would say my younger brother was faster than me, Fanga. He was a beast, and my brother Tauni, he was MVP for 5A for Hunter High School. Mm-hmm. He played with Ray Fenga and Matt Asiata and all those guys up north. And so, we were just football was the thing.
When did you? This is always fascinating to me. When did you realize that not only were you good at it, but you have a skill that will allow you to continue to play after high school? When did you have that realization?
I think when I got my first offer. Actually, it wasn't my first offer. It was when I got invited to a Nike camp out in Oregon University, and so this was my sophomore year, and I went to Oregon and competed against all the running backs out there and linebackers. And when they clocked me and they're like, "Hey man, you run in a 4.5, you're like close to a 4.4, like you can play." And I was like, "What does that mean?" You know? And that was the first time at that time, or like Nike, it wasn't like, there was no combine. It was just like a made up, "Hey, we'll just find you if you do well." And that was like the first of its kind that Nike kind of, "Hey, we're going to invite you to this combine, like, and find kids." And so it was kids, running backs and receivers and quarterbacks from all over the nation came to that. And there was like 300 of us. And right after that, that's when I started competing, I'm like, "Man, I think I can do this."
What kind of confidence boost is that for a high school athlete?
That to me is everything, because I think it zones you in and it brings a focus to, or I would say just a confidence, like you can compete against anyone around the nation. And that was my confidence booster right there. When I went one-on-one with those linebackers, I was like, man, this is cake. I'm gonna eat these guys up. I'm gonna just break their ankles for how big I was.
Sure. Right?
And so, and I was like, man, I could play at this. I could play at this weight and go after some guys.
So do you remember who your first offer was from?
Yeah, it was University of Utah. And then right after that, it was BYU, then Nebraska, and Oregon, and then it just kind of trickled.
Yeah,
yeah.
Did you grow up a BYU fan?
Yes. Coach Romney, my first experience with BYU was when I went to East Little League. My coach, Coach Romney, shout out to Coach Romney and his family. He was the one that took me to a game. But mm-hmm. but before a game, he took me to the practice, and I got to meet Coach Lavelle Edwards and Coach Hemahe Muli, mm-hmm. and so I was just like, number 15, you're the truth. Like I was just like kind of awestruck,
yeah.
And so that right there was like, man, that's Hemahe Muli. Like that dude is a beast. Like I'm like, man, I want that. I'm gonna try to so. At the 8 years old, 9 years old, that's when, man, that was my first experience with BYU, like just touching and experiencing it. But the reality was my grandfather was a BYU fan, mm. and I got to watch that even when I was, like, I can remember before I played football or anything, we'd just watch all the highlights, and my grandpa's like, that's the church school, 'cause he was baptized into the church out in Tonga, mm-hmm. and so his family were all Catholics, and he was the only member, and so he'd always just stick with we're a Latter-day Saint, and we're gonna go support the church school,
yeah.
and go from there, because Liahona High School that's where all the members would go to out in Tonga in our country. A motherland, but they would just stay loyal to the church schools,
yeah.
and go from there. And so BYU has always been intertwined in my life.
So for all of those reasons, even though Utah was the first offer, when yeah. BYU offered, was it game over? Or was there still a decision to make?
Yeah, see, a lot of people don't know how I really committed to BYU. The way I committed to BYU was my dad. He committed me. Like we went into Coach Croton's office, and this is after Coach Croton threw a big luau recruiting experience, and Kalani was the GA, and Tom Setake, he was there, and man, I have pictures of those that experience too. It was me, Curtis Brown, Ben Olson, Haloti Ngata, Will Tukwa. We were all in that luau night, like, all right, we need everybody to come and commit. And we were like, all right, yeah. Everybody's verbally committed, but we didn't really commit, right? And when we went into that office with Coach Croton and went in that office, and it's right at the SAB. It was that those offices over there where the volleyball office,
yeah.
that right there, I look at that office, I'm like, that was a place where that impacted and changed my life forever in that room right there. And when we walked in, I looked at my dad, and he was just in our culture, in our Polynesian culture, is like parents have the last say, right? And whatever they say, it goes. And before I said anything, my dad just hit the table and goes, Coach Croton, my son coming to BYU. And it was that. And I looked at him, and I looked at him. I didn't say anything. I just nodded my head respectfully, and I'm like, I'm coming to BYU. This is where I'm coming. So follow the commandments. You'll live a long life, hopefully. Hopefully I'm doing that right now. So because of him. So thank you, Dad. He's the one that really committed me. Committed me here to BYU.
Wow, what a great story. So you commit to Coach Croton, but you decide to go serve a mission.
Yes.
Carlsbad, California, correct?
Carlsbad, yep.
Okay, so during that time,
yeah.
Coaching change. After your mission, Coach Croton is no longer the coach. It's now Bronco Mendenhall.
Yeah.
How was that transition for you coming back to a coach that you didn't know?
Yeah, that I actually, you know, before I left, I knew a little bit, like me and Bronco, I think he admired my style when I played, because he was a defensive
coordinator, right? Yep.
And he would always try to recruit me to go, you should play linebacker. I'm like, man, I'm going to run over all your linebackers. Like, I'm going to do that every time to you at 2003, right? And then when I left and I came back I think what impressed me with Coach Bronco was he was just matter of fact, like, we need you. That's all he said, and just my loyalty and commitment to BYU was that changed. Just having that year and a half of experience before I went on my mission was what I needed to grow up and learn and grow, and then that was just an easy. I'm transitioning right into Coach Mendenhall's experience.
Everybody that chooses to go on a mission, it's their own. They do it for their own reasons. Their own. It's they either choose to do it or they decide to go a different route. Was a mission always in play for you? Was that always the plan for you, that I'm going to serve a mission?
Yeah, I would say my grandfather, like, he was the one that kind of planted the seed, and just like, you know, your word is your bond. So, like, you know, he kind of committed me to going in primary. He's like, you going on your mission? I'm like, yeah, I guess so. I'm going to go on my mission. I'm like, all right, I'm expecting you go on a mission. But the reality was that I was teeter-tottering at like 2003 when I was playing, and after like, you know, when we played Utah and it was that 3-0, I was like, man, I want to come back and beat these guys. I can't believe we lost by 3 points.
3 points, yeah.
And it was a snowy game. But I'm like, man, I ran all over these guys. Like, I felt like I was that confident. I'm like, I think I could come back and make an impact. But there was a moment in that season where I was hurt. I got hurt. And I made a commitment in my mind, in my heart, and to the man upstairs, that I would make that commitment about going on a mission, and that's what I did. I just went on the mission, yeah, and came back thankful to have that scholarship ready and there for me.
Yeah, and you were blessed.
Yeah,
you did what the Lord had asked you to do, and you were blessed because
absolutely, yeah, for sure.
So, you were obviously a very big reason why BYU football was so successful during your time in Provo. Some incredible plays and incredible games. You played with other great running backs, Curtis Brown, Harvey Unga, just to name. What was that group, that time in BYU football like to be a part of?
It was, I would say that was the buildup, right? That was a buildup of, like, finding our identity and really, like, really knowing, like, what is our true culture here at BYU. And I got to play with the great John Beck, right? And there was also good supporting cast behind that, right? And you know, I would say shout out to those coaches that were with that stayed with Bronco, Coach Lance Reynolds, Marky Atawaya, that was helping behind the scenes, Coach and I, man, you had Coach Lamb, all those guys, so some good dudes that we trusted, and then they trusted us to, like, you know, now it's time to take ownership. And that was what Bronco kind of gave to us, like, you want to take ownership of the team, take ownership. Like, we got to take ownership of what our culture is and what our identity is and how we're going to, you know, play physical, be relentless in what we do, you know, being there for each other, like, you know, backing each other, just no backbite. It's just all those things that had to go into place. And whatever happened with the years past, it was, to me, that was kind of just broke the camel's back on trust. Like, now we can trust each other to play for each other. Even though we lost those two games against Arizona and Boston College, man, we knew we should have won those games. We were like, man, I believe we're the true BCS busters. Like, we I don't think no one could beat us. But it was just, you know, few calls here and there, and but the reality was that the game that that really got us going was that TCU game.
Yeah,
and it was a physical game, and we were like, we're gonna play, we're gonna just run down the middle and see if they could stop us, and that's what we did. And so thankful for those guys that up front, the offensive line, like they were awesome as well. From Ray Fanga to Jay Caressa to, man, we had Oswald, man, all those guys, Travis Bright, man, we had some dogs.
You've mentioned a couple of specific games. Do you have a most memorable game or most memorable play that stands out to you about your career?
I think everyone knows that the Tulsa most memorable play, but I would say that TCU game where I ran just straight down the middle. I don't think a lot of people know that. I just ran through a few guys. And right after that, I thought I broke the line, and I just got like a shoelace, like tackle. They just barely got me, but I went past it. I thought I was gonna have like a 60-yard touchdown after, but it was a shoelace tackle. But I got up, and I just looked at those guys, and just there's a picture out there of just me yelling like, "You can't stop us." There was no like, and I was just. Yeah, we're telling those linebackers, we're coming this way, stop us. Let's see if you can stop us. So me and Manasseh, and who else was there? Like me and Manasseh, we were just like, we're coming right here. Let's see if you can stop us. And Curtis Brown, like we're like, yeah, we're gonna run over you guys. And that was the, I think for me, that was a play that I'll forever remember, because that's. When we knew we're gonna have a special year, and we're undefeated the rest of the year.
Yeah. So I want to ask you a similar question to the one that I asked from going to high school to college.
Yeah.
When did you realize that you were gonna have an opportunity at the next level in the National Football League?
I truly believe that I thought I would. I don't know if people around me thought that I would, but I just believe that when I. Maybe it was a mentality I had, or how my dad raised me. It was like you're the best, like, and believe that you're the best. And no, and if you work hard, if you're relentless, and you truly believe in your mind and your heart that all you put in the work, that no one that you know you can make it to the NFL. Yeah. And I think. When I did make it to college, that's when I felt like I believe I can make it to the NFL. It was just a matter of putting in the work,
yeah,
and not giving up. And a lot of those guys that make it to the NFL are just guys that just finished, you know, that did the extra, the little things, the extra work, meeting with the player, with the coaches. It goes a long ways. And for those that believe in you, like, man, that just gives you extra motivation. And so I think right when I came here, my first practice, and I was playing, it was kickoff return, and they had me returning the ball. That's when I believed, like, that I still remember, it was with Mula Vaipula, and it was me and him. And I'm like, man, I really believe I can make it to the next level. And I took it to the house at that time too, and so I had a little bit of speed back in the day, but the weight crept in. So,
so your BYU career comes to an end, and you do get an opportunity. You sign with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
You even featured on the HBO's Hard Knocks, and uh-huh. I remember that season.
Yep.
And I'm the guy back in the day.
Oh,
like,
man.
I didn't have HBO, but I would always get it. Right before Hard Knocks, so that I could watch Hard Knocks, and then as soon as Hard Knocks was done, then I cancel the HBO subscription. But I remember you on there, and I was so proud that they were focusing. You had a major storyline on that. You became one of those guys that the cameras would follow in your journey. How strange was that? Because you got to remember, it wasn't that long ago, but it's long ago enough. That it's not like today where everybody's got a phone and everybody's used to having cameras following them like that.
Yeah.
I've got to imagine it was pretty strange.
Yeah, it was them following you everywhere. They follow you. They sometimes kind of set you up, say we won't be there, but they'll be there, right? And so, but that to me was I'll forever. I'm just thankful for those experiences because I'd always fall back on what I believed in, right? Who are you? If they were going to ask me a hard question or anything, I just fall back on, like, I know, well, I'm a son of God, you know, just that if anything was my thing was to protect that last name and to represent that name in such a way where hopefully it would make impacts. And if they heard my story and if it helped other people, then that would hopefully inspire young ones to they could go for it. And that was an awesome experience. I got to meet with a lot of characters in that experience. But it was fun. I got to build some good relationships with my teammates and with the Bengals, with Ray Maulunga, Chris Presley, who I competed with, and with Cedric Benson, rest in peace, and Chris Henry, rest in peace. Those are guys that I built a bond with, and Domatapeko, John Finette, all those guys, and they have stories to tell, right? And they've been through the ringer in life and went through those experiences. So hearing them kind of even helped me, you know, gain confidence. I'm like, man, all these guys been through hardship. Everyone goes through it. It's just a matter of how you get up and never give up and just keep going at it.
What are the chances that we see that hairstyle come back?
Man, that was because all those guys,
explain what, explain your hairstyle.
The hair, I would call it a genie. I'll call it a genie haircut. Like, you just, you know, Last of the Mohicans, like, you cut it all bald up in the front and then leave your hair out in the back. And I had my wife braid it, right, all the way down to a ponytail. That was just a joke of, like, you know, Ray was the one that said, hey, well, man, all of us have long hair except you. I'm like, man, my hair is receding. Like, BYU was the last time I had it long. So I grew it out. I grew it out in the back and just had, you know, business up front, party in the back, and that's right. What it was for a good solid 3 months, and then I cut it.
How would you describe your NFL career?
One of the best learning experiences. A transition from being a young man into just being I would say a young man to a man. That right there helped me become independent in a way, in finding who I was. I got married right then and there with my beautiful wife, Leon Hunkin at the time. Now she's a Vakapuna. Shout out to you, Leon. But it was literally baptism by fire out there. Like, when you go into NFL, it's a business.
Yeah.
It's a true bona fide. It's plus minus. If you didn't get that, if you made that wrong step, that's a minus, right? Like, and it was that intentional, and that intense. It was a good learning experience for me to get it out there in the world and see what's out there. But it helped me. It helped me become stronger mentally, in saying I could do hard things.
Yeah.
Right. Like that. That's, I didn't realize how hard it was gonna be. I thought it was like gonna be a fairy tale. I made it to the NFL. Like, let's go. I got drafted. Like, man, I hit these marks, and I thought I made it. But man, it was tough. It was hard. It was real hard. I was with four teams. I was with the Bengals. I was with the Cardinals. I was with the Colts. I was with the Jets. You know, my last year. So, like, it was tough, and it was tough to go through that, to get cut, to get back, to be on the team, be there for a little bit, think you're valued, and then you get switched up and get traded, or you get cut and get picked up again. So, but the reality was I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Every athlete comes to a point in their playing career when it's time to move on. Was that an easy thing for you to deal with, or was it difficult?
I would say I was, man, the good Lord blessed me with a easy transition. At the time when I was making my transition, I was in denial in a way, but the reality was Elder Reed, he was my bishop, and he was the one that told me, and I was still working out, trying out to make it on a team for the next year, and he was the one that straight up said, "Hey, Fui, what do you think about applying for this position at BYU as assistant AD?" And I'm like, "Man, I'm still working out, Bishop. I don't know." And so he was on me for a little bit, and then my wife got on me. It was like, "Yeah, go just test it out and see what that was, and see that what it is." And I put in my application, and I got a call from Tom Homo, and I was shocked. And he gave me a call, and I had my interview with him, and he just asked me, "Are you willing to finish off?" Transition and make your transition and retire from football completely. I just was kind of stunned, and shocked me. And I was, and right then and there, I'm like, "All right, I'm going to retire." I'm like, "Yeah, I'll completely finish." And a week later, he called me to be the assistant AD.
What a great story. I didn't realize it happened that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the transition. So I was lucky. I was fortunate. And I say that only the Lord can make it happen where he made it easy for me to make that transition into BYU. Because I was volunteering at Scenic View as an employment, just helping adults with disability. So that's what I was doing in between football. I would just go out and help employ individuals that had some type of disability, so I'll just help them, serve them, mm-hmm. Cue them, and talk to them, and be a friend for them. And then, and when I applied, I was thinking I was going back to the NFL and get picked up. And then Tom asked me right in his office, "Are you willing to finish?" Yeah. And I haven't talked about this story, but I love that man. That man right there, he was a great mentor of mine and a great leader. One of the best, greatest examples that he taught me how to become who I was supposed to become. And this is it. This is who I am at this present time, is because of him and because of his faith in me. Because I was fairly new to what an administrator was, or I didn't know what an administrator was. But I built a good relationship with him as a student. And when I went off and played in the league for that long, and then for him to entrust me, it's like, "Hey, can you come and help our kids that are struggling or going through some things? Can you mentor them? Can you find ways to help these kids that have a lot of baggage, right, and that are at risk?" And I told him, like, "Man, I think I have enough experience to share with them and their families to make that transition from high school to BYU, from BYU to their careers in post college." So, shout out to Tom Homo. I can't believe he's gonna be
hanging him up,
and that one of my great mentors right there.
Well, I covered your career as a player. I've been around you for years after your playing career. You are such an inspiration, not just with what you have dealt with physically over the last year or two, but just your attitude and your testimony. And I cannot thank you enough for being willing to come in and talk today. This was so much fun. So thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you so much, Jay.
All right, man. All right. Once again, thank you to my guest, Fui Vakapuna. My name is Jason Shepherd. Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Waugh. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.